invite you to join me in Daniel chapter 3. I love Daniel chapter 3. This is a high energy, high octane chapter. I'm going to be moving very quickly. I'm going to do part 1, then I'm going to go be seated. We're going to have a time of worship. I'm going to come back up and close out with part 2. So this will be a two-part message here in just a few moments. And here's what I want you to write down in your notes. Scene 1, it's the king's proclamation and the response. Scene 1 is the king's proclamation and the response. Now, we're in Daniel chapter 3. And maybe in your own life, I want you to think about, have you ever had your faith tested? Have you ever had your faith tested? Have you ever gone through a season of testing where your faith was tested? Have you ever come to a place in your life where the odds were against you, where you seemed like the obstacles were overwhelming, and you didn't see how God would see you through that experience? And what you come to discover in your journey with God is that without a test, there is no testimony. That God allows tests to come into our lives to build our spiritual muscles, to build our spiritual resume, and to grow us to be more and more like Jesus. So God does not allow a test to come into our lives and not use it for our good and His glory. Remember, anything that happens to a child of God is Father filtered. So if God allows something to come into your life, God's going to use it. And what we're going to see here in Daniel chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their faith is going to be deeply tested. And we'll see if they grow through it or if they collapse. Look at scene 1 in Daniel chapter 3. And here's what's happening here. King Nebuchadnezzar is what we would call in our current vernacular a narcissistic leader. It's all about him. And he's so self-consumed and so self-absorbed that he wants to be worshipped. And so he erects or has made a 90-foot statue of himself by 9 feet wide, and it is covered in gold, this huge image. Now, just to comprehend how large this statuette is, just imagine going up I-45 and you're almost to Huntsville, and off to the right is this gargantuan man on the side of the road. His name? Sam Houston. How tall is Sam Houston on I-45? Including the base, 77 feet tall. So King Nebuchadnezzar has his image erected in gold at the height of 90 feet. 90 feet. That would be our current about an 8-story office building. And it's all about Nebuchadnezzar. And he then makes this decree, bringing all the nations together, and they're going to unify religion, unify everything, and it's all about him being worshipped, and he has the band about to play, and he says, now when the band cranks up, you are to bow and worship this image. That's the decree. And if you choose not to do that, what happens? You'll be thrown into the fiery furnace. So door number 1, worship me. Door number 2, fiery furnace. You choose, you decide your destiny. Now, the options were embraced. Some complied and some defied. The majority complied with the king's command and everything was fine. But there were 3 who defied the king's command. Their names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We pick up in verse 13 of chapter 3. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. Now, you can see he's worked up. Why? Because they didn't bow. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now this is amazing that he would even give them a second chance. He could have had them killed on the spot. That was a decree. He said, now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, drums, guitars, every kind of music, to fall down. I'm trying to modernize a little bit. To fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And then this loaded question, and who is the God who would deliver you out of my hands? So here we see King Nebuchadnezzar giving Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego a second chance. Why? Because they have had favor with the king. These are young men that were deported from Jerusalem into Babylon, and they've been educated under the king's command. And these are outstanding young men. And so he's given them a second chance. which brings us to scene two. Now we're going to notice Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's faith in God's faithfulness. Don't miss that. Faith in God's faithfulness. Now look at verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. Now that's a strange response. What they're saying is, we don't have to defend ourselves. We don't have to articulate an answer before you, because long before we met you, we made a firm decision that we would obey God at all costs. We made a decision and firmed up our convictions that we're going to honor the one true living God. So long before we had this temptation, long before we had this test, long before we had this trial, we already solidified in our hearts that we will be loyal and devoted to the one true God. As I've shared with you last Sunday, you prepare for the battle before the battle. You firm up your convictions before you are placed on the field of battle. As Paul would say, be ready in season, out of season. Always be prepared. Live in the ready mode. Firm up your convictions. Know what you believe and know why you believe what you believe, and stand firm under God. Now we pick up in verse 17. If this be so, I love their response to the king. If this be so, in other words, if you're going to throw us in the fiery furnace, if this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us. Look at that confidence. He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, the best verse in the whole chapter. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Now this is so profound. Don't miss this. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego trust in God's will. They trust in God's ability, they trust in God's timing, and they trust in God's ultimate decision. Here are the three questions, and I want to ask you, whatever you're going through, whatever you're dealing with, is God able? How would you respond to that? Yeah. Now let me give you another opportunity. Is God able? Yes! The question is not, can God pull this off? Can God? God can do anything. There's nothing God cannot do. God is able, but the second question is, will God? So it's not, is God able? We know he's able. He can do anything. But the question is, will God deliver? And what we learn about the child of God is that for a child of God, we know God is able and God can deliver. Will God deliver? We don't know. But whether God delivers or not, here's what we do know. For the child of God, it's a win-win. Paul said, for me to live, Christ, to die, gain. If I live, Jesus. If I die, heaven. It's a win-win situation. The third question is, what if he does not? Now, that's where it brings in the opportunity for the but if not faith. What if God doesn't come through? What if God does not show up? What if God does not heal? What if God does not restore? What if God does not reconcile? What if God does not deliver? That's when your but if not faith comes in. That I'm not going to bow, I'm not going to bend, I'm not going to budge, even if God doesn't choose to come through. This became very real to me, and it's hard to believe it's been 16 years ago. It's the year 2000. We had just moved to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It was my first day in the office as pastor. And the associate pastor, who had been there many years, came into my office, closed the door, said, can I have a moment? I said, well, sure. And he looked very emotional, like something had happened. And we sat down. I said, well, Lewis, what's going on? He said, well, I just got off of the phone with my doctor, and he said, I have prostate cancer. Very aggressive on the Gleason scale, an 8. And he was shocked and stunned, and I was shocked and stunned. We knelt down and had prayer together. So, look, go home to Sheila. Man, we're going to be praying for you, and we're going to walk with you through this. And he went through a very difficult journey. In fact, I remember driving all the way from Baton Rouge with Lewis and Sheila all the way to Houston, Texas, to MD Anderson. Have you heard of that place? And it is like a city unto itself. And we spent a couple of days here as he began to receive treatments. And just watching him every month, he was living for that PSA number. Every month, just waiting for that number to come out. And he endured that many, many years. And then just a few years ago, we had his home going service. And he went to heaven. when he and I would have deep conversations about his cancer, he would get so real. Here's what he'd say. Every time he'd say, "Can God heal me? Yes. Will God heal me? That's none of my business." That was his answer. Can God heal me? Yes. Will God heal me? That is none of my business. He was saying about himself. Can God heal me? Yes. Will God heal me? That's none of my business. And I was like, "Well, I want to make it our business. We want God to heal you. We've been praying that God will heal you. We're believing God for your healing." He say, "Whether God heals me or not is none of my business." You remember when Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane in his darkest moment? And he said, "Father, may this cup pass from me." In other words, if there's any other way to accomplish redemption, if there's any other way to redeem mankind from sin, may this cup pass from me. That's my preference. My heart is, could this pass from me and let's go another direction? And then Jesus said, "Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." Maybe we bring "nevertheless" into our prayer life. Lord, we believe you can deliver. We believe you can heal this marriage. We believe you can bring reconciliation and restoration and healing to our family. We believe that you can provide a way for a job. We believe you can bring us through this. We believe you can heal. God, the word, do you choose to do it or not? May your will be done. If we could just get to that place of bringing "nevertheless" in our prayer life, "nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." God, here's my heart. Here's our passion. Here's our desire. "Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done."
We hope that you've enjoyed the message today and that it will be a source of encouragement to you this week. At Champion Forest Baptist Church, we desire to help people make sense out of life through Christ-centered living. And that's because with Christ, we have hope and true satisfaction. The Bible clearly states that all men have offended God by worshiping things he created instead of him. We have chosen to reject his authority in our life and look for satisfaction in things he created instead of him, which is ultimately pointless given that he is truly the only thing that can satisfy us completely. He is the perfection of everything we seek. The problem is, though, that once we have sinned against him by turning to these other things, a gap is created between us, not allowing us to access him anymore to find this satisfaction. God's character demands that our rebellion be accounted for before he forgives us. And this is the beauty of the message of Jesus. Christ is perfect in every way. He never rebelled against God, and he took upon our punishment on himself so that we could be reconciled to God and be fully satisfied in him, gaining eternal life. We need Jesus because without him, we are without hope, both in this life and for eternity. Turn to Christ alone for forgiveness and find satisfaction fully in our great God. Once again, thanks for joining us today, and we hope to see you soon.